Well, welcome everyone to this author chat with Maria Ross, author of Rebooting My Brain, How a Freak Aneurysm Reframed My Life. I'm Debbie Whitlock, and I'm host of the Femination Radio Show on AM 1150 in Seattle. You can always listen online at 1150kknw.com. And I'll be guiding the discussion today. You know, we're going to be discussing questions about Maria's book as well as offering advice and perspective on the memoir writing and publishing process for those of you who have a book in you. For those of you who haven't had a chance to pick it up, please visit rebootingmybrain.com for information on where to buy free chapters and book reviews. It is available, so you know, in both digital and print forms. And some of you have submitted questions ahead of time, and so we'll get to those as well, as we should have time at the end to take some open questions. So if you can mute your phones, we are recording the call, and it will be made available to you via email. So welcome, Maria. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Deb?
I'm well. So let's dive into the meat of the matter and help these people out. So
yes,
for people who maybe haven't had an opportunity to pick up your book yet, share with everyone joining us today what it's all about.
Well, the book, Rebooting My Brain, is about my survival and recovery from a near-fatal brain aneurysm in 2008. And I chronicle sort of the time before the aneurysm, life as we knew it, and then talk through the actual event itself and the hospital stay, and then go on to sort of chronicle my recovery journey. And my mission with it was really to educate people on a lot of the surprising and unseen effects of brain injury that we learned about, obviously, during this whole ordeal, and also just to inspire people to sort of bounce back into their life after any crisis, whether it's a health crisis or a divorce or, you know, financial, whatever it is, a lot of the lessons that I learned and that I share in the book can equally apply to helping folks get through some of that as well.
Beautiful. What do you think, Maria, were some of the more surprising effects of brain injury that you learned through your experience and think it's important for people joining us today to know?
Well, as I mentioned, you know, we learned a lot more about the brain than we ever really cared to know as we kind of went through this. So that was really the crux of writing the book, was to educate people. And some of the more surprising effects, there's both cognitive effects, and also those cognitive effects can lead to some sort of psychological and emotional effects. And some of the real big ones that impact you no matter what kind of brain injury you have can be your filter in your frontal lobe is sometimes affected, which means you get a lot more overwhelmed than you used to. You sort of take in information at equal weight rather than being able to sort of filter through it. So a lot of times that can be really hard if you're in like a loud, noisy bar, or you're in Times Square, as happened to me, or even just, you know, if there's just a lot of information coming at you at one time. Like sometimes I do have to kind of rewind a little bit when I'm watching a really in-depth documentary or something like that. If there's just too much information coming at me at one time, I sort of need to slow down the pace of it. Another big surprise were things like, you know, aggression, anxiety, depression. You know, sort of when your brain's wiring gets a little bit messed up, a lot of those things get impacted. Some people in more severe cases revert to childlike behavior, again, because their filter and their social graces are affected. And a lot of people are, in fact, infected by impulse control and anger and aggression and anxiety. And those are the really big ones, I think, that cause problems for the caregivers and the families and friends of those around them. The person looks fine, so they don't understand why these personality changes are taking place.
Are you still on medication now, or do you still go to rehab therapy?
I don't currently go to rehab therapy. I was very, very fortunate in that I did not require medication when I came home from the hospital. Well, I did when I first came home from the hospital, but ongoing medication. A lot of brain injury survivors and aneurysm survivors have to go on anti-seizure medication or blood
mm-hmm.
thinning medication. The only medication I am on is to control blood pressure. My blood pressure is naturally high regardless of how fit or healthy I am because it's in my family. And I have another small aneurysm that is unruptured. And in order to keep it that way, we're trying to keep my blood pressure in check. So I am on a beta blocker, a very, very low dosage that I take every day. But, you know, knock on wood, I've been very fortunate because I belong to a lot of brain injury survivor groups online, and there's so many people that are on constant medications, still dealing with chronic pain every day, chronic headaches, things like that. So I've been very, very fortunate.
How would you describe your life now?
Well, I think a lot of it has changed for the better. In order to compensate for some of my cognitive difficulties, I had to learn a new way to work and a new way to sort of approach my life. And they were not bad lessons for me to have to learn. I've tried to slow down the pace of my life a little bit, although, you know, my husband still scolds me every now and then for trying to do too much and writing a book and promoting it and getting back to my business. But yeah, I definitely can't multitask the way I used to, that filter issue that I mentioned earlier. So I have to be very diligent and focused when I work. I can only accept limited clients at one time. But it's good because it helps me think about quality rather than quantity. And I've stopped the frenetic pace of the hamster wheel. I still might run pretty fast every now and then, but it's definitely helped me appreciate the moment much more. And just even when I do start spiraling out of control, taking that breath, appreciating the present, you know, thinking about, hey, this could really be worse. You could be back in ICU with your hair all shaved off and tubes coming out of your head. So it does put things in perspective.
Sounds like lessons that many of us who are on the hamster wheel without brain injuries could take away and learn from.
Exactly.
Huh?
That is definitely part of my message.
Oh, good for you. So, you know, in the book, I've read it myself now, there are many themes that come through the book multiple times around community, courage, and even humor to get through challenging times, whether it's in regards to a brain injury or not. And it really does, like we were just talking about, apply to so many more people than just those who have suffered a brain injury. What are some of the fundamental themes that you want people to be able to take away from your work?
I think really just like the ones you mentioned, community, facing the fear, using humor is huge with me. That I definitely wanted to write a book that was not schmaltzy and that was heartfelt but humorous at the same time. And, you know, finding humor in those dark times I think is really helpful. Some of the other major themes in the book is really about you know, patience and acceptance. And I kind of got dragged kicking and screaming during my recovery process to learn to be a little bit more patient and learn to be more accepting. And I think I had kind of always looked at those things as very negative before. Being sort of a go-getter, I equated patience with stagnation and acceptance as settling. And really, patience is just about forward progress. You know, something might not happen overnight, but as long as you're making small strides every day, which obviously was important to me during recovery, then you're on the right track. And with acceptance, it was about once I stopped struggling with what I used to be better at, what I used to be able to do more quickly, the old me. Once I was able to just accept that there was a new me and then go, okay, now how do I deal with this? You know, there's a new me, there's a new sheriff in town. Let's adapt. Let's evolve and focus on my strengths rather than lamenting what the loss of things that I could no longer do as effectively anymore. And literally, I mean, I can remember some of the days when that lesson really hit me. You know, my progress accelerated when I finally got out of my own way.
Yes, a new reality. And again, a theme fundamentally, even for those of us without brain injuries, getting
exactly.
out of our own way.
Yes, get out of your own way. That's a huge theme.
I love it. Great part. Okay, so let's do this. Let's tackle, you know, the small and always fun topic of healthcare. you know, not that things are changing or, you know, some big announcements have been made here, but, you know, going through your experience, has
Mm-hmm.
your perception and view of healthcare in our country in particular, has it changed how you view healthcare?
Well, this is an interesting one because I know we've got some folks from the UK that are on this call. I think I definitely see the debate in a different light. I do not claim to be an expert on the healthcare reform because I still think they haven't really accurately explained it well to people. But I think that my eyes were open to the fact that we were very fortunate in that my husband had amazing benefits through his company. And our bills, when you total up ICU surgeries, rehab, the ongoing rehab, in-home care, I mean, well over a half a million dollars. And, that could have broke us. So I really feel very strongly that unless you're touched by something like this, it's very easy to, in the abstract, say, like, the system is fine the way it is. But what if we hadn't had those benefits? What if my husband had to make choices about my care based on the cost? And this is not, you hear a lot in this debate about, oh, well, doctors are going to make the decisions based on the cost. But, the patient has to make decisions based on the cost, really, even if the doctors put the options in front of them and say, we'll do whatever you want us to do, but, here's the issues. Maybe if we'd ha not had great insurance, I wouldn't have been able to do my outpatient group therapies, which were vital to me getting back into my life and getting back into my business. And if that was looked at as a luxury by my insurance agent or, by my insurance company, I maybe wouldn't have done that, and I would be hurting. Really, I get emails from people all over the world responding to the book, and a lot of them, they were literally sent out from the hospital after their brain aneurysm surgeries with a pamphlet and, some pills and good luck, and no way to deal with the cognitive and the psychological and the emotional effects that we talked about earlier.
So switching gears, I want to talk about the book, the writing, the publishing process itself. And, you published your first book, Branding Basics for Small Business, with a small publisher. Describe what the experience was like working with a publisher versus this time around you decided to self-publish.
Well, yes. So I wrote Branding Basics for Small Business back in 2009 and published it with a small press based in the Midwest. And at the time, my goals for the, it was all based on my goals for the book. And at that time, I didn't necessarily have the money up front to pay for design and printing and distribution and to put all that work into it. So it was a good fit for me at the time because they basically took care of all that. And I approved the cover design and the layout and such, but they were basically taking the financial risk. And there's so many little details about how to get distributed and getting me into bookstores and getting me online and all that kind of stuff. So that was a good first time experience. But I quickly learned that you're responsible for your own marketing and promotion no matter what. And this is true even if you get signed with Random House. If you're not Stephen King or Elizabeth Gilbert or somebody, they're not necessarily doing everything for you. They're not assigning a publicist for you. And I've even spoken with a lot of friends who are authors who are publishing through publishers, as well as read a lot online that even people that are working with publishers that have publicity departments, the publicity folks are less than stellar on many occasions. Some of them are using very archaic methods. Some of them don't understand online marketing and how to really leverage social media. So the author ends up having to do a lot of the work yourself. And because of that, the financial reward is you're putting a lot into it, but the publisher is getting the lion's share of the profit, and you're only getting a small royalty. So for this book, I decided to self-publish it for several reasons, mostly not driven by the money aspect of it. But first of all, I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to go through the process of writing a proposal, trying to get an agent, and then waiting a couple more months, and then getting a publisher, and then waiting about a year before it could get to market. And that's the thing you give up when you're working with a traditional publisher, is the time to market is a little bit longer. In addition, I wanted to control this story. Obviously, it's a very personal story, and I wanted it told a certain way. And that meant that I didn't want a publisher to make me make it schmaltzy or sentimental or not as, cheeky and and in spots humorous as it is. And so I really wanted to tell my story my way with my themes. And so that was really nice to have that control. It is a lot more complicated if you're self-publishing, and I work with a wonderful publishing assistant named Janica Smith of Adminismith, who has helped me, you know, get the book up on Amazon, get it up on Barnes & Noble. You know, I had to work through getting the book professionally edited, and I paid for that, and that's really important if you self-publish. I got the cover designed. I got it converted into ebook. So all of those things, you know, they're just extra little details that you have to deal with. But in my opinion, it's been a really good experience. Now, if, you know, Simon & Schuster comes calling tomorrow with an advance to take my book and buy the rights and distribute it, I'd probably accept the offer, but not for monetary reasons, more because the big publishers do provide a huge benefit in being able to get you into physical bookstores, which I know is sort of less and less these days, but if that's really what you want and you want to be found in physical bookstores as well as online, you're much more likely to get that distribution by working with a traditional publisher.
So this was a very personal story. How did writing Rebooting My Brain, How a Freak Aneurysm Reframed My Life differ from writing the business book?
Well, so obviously very different. I think that with the business book, it was more like my intellect was on the line, and with this book, it's more like my heart was on the line. Because with the business book, it was about me being an expert in branding and marketing and offering advice that small business owners could use, and I was detached from the subject. You know, I had nothing personally invested in the subject. So this book, it was sort of a very emotional and personal experience writing about this, but I also think which was great about working with a professional editor with this book, is you really need to be committed when you're writing a memoir to keep your audience in mind. And you could very easily go off and make the book really egocentric and make it all about you, and you always have to remember what's in it for the reader. And so whereas that was easier to do when I was dispensing branding advice and marketing advice, because obviously that was the benefit for the reader, this it was like, okay, if I'm going to tell this little vignette about this story that happened, is this worth it? Is the reader going to walk away with something valuable? So there was a lot more always going back to my reader and my target audience while writing the memoir to make sure that it wasn't just one giant, you know, 200 plus pages of an ego trip. Basically.
Anyhow, what about me?
Yeah, but enough about me. What do you think of me? You know, it's like, so that was hard. And, you know, and definitely the obvious things of, you know, you're writing about very personal stuff. You're writing about real people. I had to make sure that my friends were comfortable with me using their real names. Luckily I had very good things to say about them. So they were, they were pretty comfortable with that. But, you know, you always wonder what are people going to think of your opinions about them? You know, in your life and how you view them. So that made it very challenging but very interesting at the same time.
How long did it take you to write the book, and what are some tips that you could offer to everyone joining you today on how to write an entire book now that you yourself have written two?
Well, that was always my biggest fear, because I've been writing since I was 6, and I have about, you know, like 10 chapter ones of different novel ideas sitting on my computer, because I get bored, and I'm very much more an article writer. Like, blogs are perfect for me, because I'm, you know, miss short attention span, so the idea of writing a whole book from start to finish, something that was interesting enough to carry people through, was very daunting. But once I did it with my branding book and put the outline in place and had, you know, had the guts of it and then filled in, and, you know, to make each chapter really robust, my confidence in my ability to do that was much higher. Now, with this book, at first I was completely daunted about doing it, because I had been finally thinking about doing this book starting about this time last year. I was, actually earlier than that. But the thought of actually writing all the stories down just killed me. So at first I looked into options of hiring a ghostwriter that I could just sort of dictate all these stories to and have them write them down. And when that wasn't really feasible, I initially worked with one editor who sort of got me started on the just start writing in stories. If you write, you know, in articles and stories, go ahead and just start documenting all the stories and the vignettes that you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Write them in separate files, and then you can string them, you can plot them into where they belong chronologically,
mm-hmm.
and then you can string them together to have the book. And that's exactly what I did. You know, so some days I'd sit down and the story would be 10 pages. Another
mm-hmm.
day I would sit down and that particular story would be 2.5.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started writing with no judgment. I just started getting the story down on paper, as well as researching with my doctors and on the internet and with various resources, trying to fill
mm-hmm.
in, you know, the factual information. So all told, I think once I started writing things down, that was probably last February or March, so 2011, I started documenting everything. And then I pretty much had my first, you know, my first edited drafts in August-ish,
mm.
you know, so I kind of worked through the summer. And I didn't write every day, but
okay.
I tried to do something every day to move the book forward.
To move the book forward. And when you were writing, so in the midst of your writing, whether it was a longer or shorter period of time, were you clear who you were writing for in the moment?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that also comes from my marketing background of really knowing who your ideal customer is.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very clear vision of three camps of people that would read this book. Number one would be brain injury survivors and their families. So they would be looking for resources. They would be looking for inspiration. They would be looking for, you know, somebody sharing stories that sounded eerily similar to their own. Then there was the audience of medical professionals that work with stroke or brain injury patients. So providing a patient perspective for them from the inside out, I thought was extremely important to give them a little bit of context to the people that they work with every day. And then finally, I also had an audience of just mostly women who love to read memoir. You know, the same women who loved Eat, Pray, Love, those
right.
type of women looking for some sort of an inspirational memoir, as we talked about earlier, to get them through any crisis that they're dealing with, not just something health-related. So
mm-hmm.
I was very clear on those people, and sort of as I would review my drafts, I would look at it sort of with an eye to each group and make
mm-hmm.
sure, you know, okay, well, maybe this chapter is going to be more applicable to this group, and this paragraph is going to be really interesting to this group,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that I was addressing all of those concerns. And I think that that's really helpful, as we mentioned earlier, to help you avoid writing things that are just about you,
mm-hmm.
making sure that it's universal and it's something other people can empathize with and learn from.
Mm-hmm. So having some sort of, it sounds like having an exercise almost that you go through as you did to really get clear on who that audience is and be writing in a way that serves them as opposed to, you know, just, you know, working out your quote-unquote stuff.
Exactly. And you know, that's really important because you're going to write in a certain voice when you
yeah.
do that. You're going to include certain information and you're going to edit out other information if you have that person, sort of that vision of that person reading the book in front of you. It's
mm-hmm.
really
mm-hmm.
helpful. It's really helpful
yeah.
to help you avoid going off in random directions.
Yeah, good. You know, the rules of self-publishing are changing every day.
yes.
How have you found, like, how are you successfully promoting your book right now? And what advice do you have for those who are joining us who have a book and want to promote it or are working on a book and will be promoting it? What are your best thoughts there?
Well, I'm still learning, and I'm still figuring this out, and it's been, you know, like I said, I published that first book in 2010, so I've been at this for about 2 years now, and I'm still learning, and there's so much more I know I could be doing to promote the book, but really, I've taken huge advantage of social media and made sure that people knew I was working on the book even before it was published. I sort of made them part of the process of me writing the book, and I think that's really important if you're writing a book is to, you know, you don't just want the first time people hear of it to be launch day.
Yeah.
You want people to be part of the journey and get excited with you and start to anticipate something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, posting little quotes from your book or telling people about the, you know, the crazy day you had trying to fit in writing today among all your other things, you know, really getting people excited. And then I've really reached out to, again, where those target audiences come into play, reaching out to groups within each of those target audiences. So doing a lot, I volunteered at the hospital that gave me my care. So I already had a lot of inroads there. But, you know, contacting the Brain Injury Association of Washington, now that I've moved back to the Bay Area, contacting hospitals here and stroke support groups and just letting them know about the book as a resource, inviting them to my book readings, being willing to speak at those events or to their groups about my experience or about the book. And I think also doing a big splash at your launch is a really great idea. So trying to maybe approach target blogs that would be interested in that content or those themes, approaching them to do what's called kind of a blog tour, which means you concentrate a bunch of activity where your posts are featured on blogs within the same time period, usually the week of the launch. And, you know, you reach out to, you maybe make a target list of 50. You'll probably hear back from maybe 10 to 20. And, you know, offering them, hey, I wrote this book. Here's why it would be of value to your community. I can offer you either an interview with me, like a Q&A, or I can guest, you know, write a guest article for you and give you content that kind of saves you time. So I did a lot of that, and that has been really effective and really connecting with people on social media so that you start to get those requests coming in, even if they're not people that you sought out in the first place. So those are just some of the tactics. I mean, there's tons of others. There's Facebook advertising. There's really getting involved in book groups like on Goodreads. I also did an online program with Amazon called KDP Select, in which I had to offer the ebook version on Amazon exclusively for 90 days. And within that time period, I was able to promote some free giveaway days, which one of them I had 11,000 downloads. And that, you know, you can't look at that as, oh, my gosh, that's 11,000 sales I would have had, because maybe those people never would have bought your book. But if you can get your book in the hands of 11,000 people and get them to start talking and get them to write reviews on Amazon, you know, your rankings will go up. All those good things will happen. So that's something that people can look into as well.
I love it. Okay, so let's shift a little bit into recovery again, because I want to talk for a little while here about your favorite four-legged friend, Eddie. What role did Eddie the dog play in this recovery? How did he help you, you know, in recovering through the brain injury and also through the process of writing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's great. You know, I talk about him a lot in the book, and we had just gotten him about six or seven months before I had the brain injury. So the really important role he played in my recovery was that he was part of my big recovery goal of being able to walk him by myself for a half an hour every morning, like we had always done. And initially, I was very weak. I had some vision problems that I write about in the book initially, so I couldn't really walk by myself. And so, you know, that was a huge goal of just being able to get to the 30 minutes. So first it was, you know, going with the therapist and walking around the block, you know, with my arm in hers. And then, you know, I was exhausted and I would have to take a 2-hour nap after that. And then it was, you know, walking down the street. And then it was finally walking along the canal. And so he really gave me a goal that, you know, your dog needs to be walked every day. There's no putting that off or feeling unmotivated or whatever. So that was really, really important to me, especially since one of the other effects I was dealing with, which I forgot to mention earlier, one of the other effects of brain injury that people often don't know about is that it affects your initiation. And so actually your get up and go. And you're not really sure why. You just like have trouble sort of getting started. And so having a goal like this where, I mean, the dog was going to make a mess in the house unless I took him out, you know, so I had to. And so it was really, really great to have that constant. And the other thing was great was, you know, he treated me like he always had. And so with him, I was normal. I wasn't just, you know, Maria, brain aneurysm patient. I was just, you know, Maria and his owner and his master. And he still wanted to play. He still wanted to, you know, cuddle. He still wanted to do all that stuff. And that was really great for my self-esteem, I think, at that time. And then while writing the book, you know, I mean, he's just always been a constant companion to me in the office. I work from home. And, you know, he would just kind of curl up at my feet while I was writing, and I found myself sometimes talking out loud to him. I was trying to work through certain sentences or words, and I'd be like, Eddie, what do you think of this? And he would just kind of look at me like, are there treats involved? If not, I don't want to know. But so yeah, I mean, I think that's just so, this whole role of companion animals to health, there's been so many studies proving that it really helps in the healing and recovery process. And even when I was in the hospital, at one point I got, or actually I think it was at 2 points, I got visits from therapy dogs. One was this big, bulky English bulldog that they just sort of dropped on my bed. And, you know, just being able to pet the dog and interact with them and stuff, that was just really, really helpful to my recovery and kind of my soul and my heart, you know.
Right. That's beautiful. You know, Maria, I just want to take a peek here and check in with everyone joining us. We're about halfway through our call, and so I was wondering, do you want to, we've covered a lot already in 30 minutes, so I just thought maybe if you want to open the lines, see if anyone who's joined us has any questions to serve them, because I don't want to keep them waiting till the end, and if they do, we can go there, and then we can then finish up at the end if you'd like.
Yeah, if anyone has a question, all you have to do to unmute yourself is press *6. And then you can press *6 again after you ask your question to remute yourself. So if you have a question, just go ahead and press *6 right now and ask your question.
We'll just wait here for a second. I know
okay.
Sometimes I'm on
yeah,
these
we
calls.
Yeah, we did kind of cover a lot. So,
hi, I have a question.
Yes. Hi.
Hi. Can you talk a little bit about what your process was to find people that helped you do all the different pieces of your book, like how did you find an editor and all those pieces of your team? Where did you go to find those people?
That is a really good question. A lot of it was partially just talking to other people and getting recommendations and doing some searches on the internet. When I found, you know, some of my publishing support, those were actually some people I had looked into when I was writing my first book, and I kind of went back to that and said, you know, what do I really need help with this book, and especially with my brain injury now and all the details that I was going to have to, you know, keep tabs on. I really needed some support on that. In terms of my editor, I actually interviewed like 7 or 8 people. I put a call out to my social media community asking if they knew any really good book editors. And then I also found some independently on my own. And I conducted interviews with them and just wanted to find out what their background was, had, you know, what other books had they worked on, were those books successful. I checked with their references of what they were like to work with, because I was really looking for editors that would, number one, be honest with me and give me tough love if I needed it. I didn't want to pay somebody to yes me to death, and really wanted somebody to be able to look at the writing with a keen, objective eye and keep that ideal audience in mind. I was also looking for people that were, you know, again, experienced with some successful books as well. I ended up hiring a developmental editor first, who sort of helped me with the blocks of where content should go and what content should be completely cut out and what should be beefed up a little bit more. And then I worked with a copy editor, a different person, who helped me kind of refine everything and work with sentence structure and grammar and all of that stuff. And then for design, I talked to a couple people. I even spoke with the guy who does Seth Godin's books for the Domino Project in New York. And I ended up working with a woman in Seattle, Julie Sager Russell, who did a great job with a friend of mine's book cover, my friend Ingrid Ricks, who wrote Hippie Boy. And I talked to her. She provided me some comps, some drafts based on a conversation. And the cover that you see was actually in that first round of comps. So that was her, you know, I said, I don't want something with a picture of a brain. I want something a little bit more abstract and probably, you know, a little bit fun. And she came up with that idea. So it was a process of reaching out to my network, doing some of my own research, but then being really diligent, especially with the editor. I really wanted to make sure I was choosing the right the right editor to guide me through this process, because I really needed someone to help me get started, to help me flesh things out, and then to help me polish at the end.
Great question. Any more questions for anyone joining us?
You can just press star 6 to unmute.
Okay. I think I hear one right now, no. Maria. So let's just, we'll keep going here.
Okay.
You know, on your business site for your personal business, you've been really open about your health experience, very transparent, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult was that, and did you find that it helped or hindered your business? And what suggestions that you have for people is kind of multiple questions here, but suggestions for people on where to draw the line, like at what point does it become oversharing?
Well, I struggled with that a little bit. I struggled with that when I started my business, about how much sort of personal information to put with my branding and marketing business. There were people that said, I don't think you should mention that you act in your spare time because, you know, businesses don't care about that. And, you know, we're in an age, though, where, especially if you're a solo entrepreneur, people want to know the person that they're working with. And, you know, I really feel like a lot of the things that are in my personal life actually help me be a better branding and marketing consultant and a better author and a better speaker. So I started incorporating some of that. And then I realized that a lot of the people that I work with, many of them actually knew the story of what had happened. And so I thought, if I really want to create this umbrella brand of being a storyteller, whether it's in your business or it's on the page or it's on the stage, then that should play into that. And really, the kind of people that I'm trying to attract in my business, they're okay with me sharing stories and educating and inspiring, as long as I don't bring that to work with me. So that's kind of where I really draw the line. I have never once, you know, used my brain injury as an excuse to not deliver to a client. The struggles that I had with some of my initial, the work that I did when I first got back to work, you know, I worked through that. I had to find a way. It wasn't about, you know, I'm sorry, I can't remember what you said on that call because I forgot to write it down. So I partnered with people that were really, really supportive and really helpful in making sure that all the T's got crossed and the I's got dotted. So I think that's kind of where you really draw the line. I think there's a lot of business owners who take the being authentic and transparent thing too far, in that they share so much and they don't deliver.
Right.
You know, when you start to not deliver for paying clients because of your personal issues, we all know things happen. I mean, God knows, I missed conference calls the day after I, you know, was almost dead from a brain aneurysm. But,
right,
you know, that's a legitimate excuse not to,
right,
not to be on a conference call. But, you know, when people just because of this age of transparency and authenticity, for them to just flippantly say, well, you need to be able to, you know, well, I didn't do this when I said I was going to do it because of X. You know, that's when I think there's a problem. And that's where I think business owners just need to be really cognizant of what they're saying yes to and what they're saying no to, and making sure that they can balance those things. But, you know, I think it's good to share some personal passions, and it's good to share some other sides of you. And it's actually, you know, really helped endear me to a lot of my clients. And I think the most important lesson is, if people are turned off by that mixture, then maybe those are not the right clients for your business.
Exactly. You know, in the book, I love your commentary about bucket lists.
So much reaction to that chapter.
It's
funny
hilarious.
How many emails I've gotten about that.
Yeah, it's a great chapter. So again, for anyone who is joining us today who hasn't had a chance to read the book, tell us a little bit about bucket lists. And then my underlying question is, are they valuable and inspiring, or in your opinion, do you see them as adding to this ridiculous pressure that we put on ourselves to live our quote-unquote best life?
Yeah, I you know, I've always been a fan of goal setting, and I've always had, you know, really, really lofty goals each year, and, you know, really worked to accomplish all of them. And but I think what happens is we kind of live in this day and age where everyone, especially I think for women, I'll be honest, I think that there's this pressure of, you know, what's on your bucket list? And, you know, are you climbing Mount Kilimanjaro while you're running a business and raising five kids and cooking organic foods from scratch at your house while you go do yoga three times a week and compete in triathlons? And those things are to be celebrated. But I think, you know, part of the lesson that I learned with this whole injury was about slowing down a little bit. And a friend of mine once wisely said, you can have everything you want, you just don't need to have it all right now. And I think what bucket lists have done and this whole movement to live your best life have sort of put a pressure on, just the phrase living your best life implies a competition.
Right.
It implies that somebody's better than somebody else or that things could be better for you and you're just not good enough for your best life. You're only leading a mediocre life. And, you know, how about just living your life, you know, and
right.
enjoying it? So that's my whole rant in the book. But yeah, I mean, I think having goals is valuable and inspiring. I think even having stretch goals is valuable and inspiring. But when it gets to the point that it makes people crazy and it actually grinds you into the ground, and I'll be honest with you, I mean, I was probably going to have this aneurysm whether I was, you know, leading the life I was leading or not, because a lot of it was organically caused from genetics and whatever. But I think that a lot of what I was trying to do when I first moved to Seattle, you know, at the same time, like buying a new house, getting the dog, starting my own business, trying to make new friends, trying to learn a new city, trying to get involved with networking groups, trying to go to yoga, I was trying to do it all. And I was trying to do, you know, pursue acting at the same time too. And I was trying to learn the theater scene. And, you know, I almost killed myself because of it. So, you know,
Literally.
You can do everything you want, but you just don't have to do it all at the same time.
Amen.
Prioritize.
Amen. I love
so I call it.
It
kick. I call it kicking your bucket list.
you got to read the chapter. Seriously, get the chapter. It will stop you from chasing your tail.
Exactly.
What about this? We're kind of wrapping up our time here. So, in summary, from you, my dear Maria, what would you say is a key piece of advice you would offer to authors or anyone who wants to share an extremely personal story with the world?
I think it's so easy these days to find a way to share your story, whether it's a blog, whether it's a book, whether it's an ebook PDF that you make yourself and you only distribute on your website. So, you know, I'm a huge proponent for writing, and everybody has a story to tell. Everybody.
Right.
You know, I didn't write this book for a long time because I thought, who am I to write this book? I'm not famous. I'm not whatever. And then when I started to talk about brain injury, all these people reached out to me and said, oh, thank you so much for sharing this information. And, you know, I really relate to your story. And then I thought, I kind of have to write this book for those people.
Yeah.
And the response has validated any doubt that I had about writing this book. I mean, like I mentioned, I get emails from all over the world from people, and they actually share their story with me and say, like, I was reading your book, and I couldn't believe it. It sounded exactly like what I went through. Or I was reading your book, and this one chapter I read out loud to my work colleagues so that they would understand what I was going through. So you kind of have a responsibility to articulate your experience in order to maybe help someone else. But, you know, find the vehicle that works the best for you. If you're better at writing in short bursts, you know, try a blog. If you really have a very deep, detailed story that you want to tell, you know, self-publishing is very accessible to people these days. I would highly, highly, highly advise, no matter what way you publish your book, hire a professional editor. I get so many great comments about the fact that my book is self-published and doesn't feel that way. Because you read, and I've read a lot of really great self-published books. The content is wonderful, but obviously it was not edited. Whether it's edited for typos and grammar or edited for, oh my gosh, this chapter is just going on and on and on and on and doesn't end. You really need to have that objective point of view on your own story because you are so into your own story. And I'll just share this little vignette with everybody. When I was having, you know, there were several moments that I had doubts while I was writing the book, you know, as we all do when we're tackling something big. And I remember a friend of mine, I kind of had that same doubt of the, like, who will care about this? Who will read this? This is all about me, blah, blah, blah. And a friend of mine said, well, but only you can tell your story. It's your voice. She's like, think about it. Eat, Pray, Love was just a book about a woman who got a divorce and took a trip. but it's she made it her story, and it resonated with millions of people. So even if your story's been told, you know, if I had actually looked at all the books written by about aneurysm or from aneurysm survivors, I may never have written my book, but only you can tell your story. It's unique. It's your perspective. It's your experience, and someone somewhere will benefit from it.
Maria Ross, thank you for today's author chat. And again, for those of you joining us, check out Maria's book. You can find more information about it at rebootingmybrain.com. For sample chapters, you'll see reviews, links where you can purchase it. It is available in both digital and print forms. And, of course, if you've read it, please leave a review for Maria on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. And thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it. And have a great afternoon.